Hi, Ryan.
Hello, Rachel. How are you?
Okay.
Yeah, you're doing okay. You're doing just fine.
Yeah, just dandy.
Rachel, as long as you're here, I'll always be here. How do you feel about that statement?
Oh.
You can't do the podcast without me, Rachel. I'm the yum to your yum. And the audience is the podcast all along. Huh?
Yeah, sure. Sure.
So, Rachel, what are we doing? What are we doing here? Are we here to talk about Star Trek Discovery, your favorite
Thank
television show?
God, no.
But Michael's in trouble. Oh, how would she get out of this one?
With her God complex and something that she pulls out of her ass.
No.
Yeah.
I hope they take down the season-long
talk
villain.
About Babylon 5, which is a different sci-fi show, which we are also talking about from the rewatch perspective. So spoilers are bound to happen.
Yeah, you've been warned. You've been warned. If you're worried, are they going to spoil it? Yes, Kosh dies. I'm sorry, but is he fully dead? I can't say.
Well,
I can say. Yeah, well, yeah. You know, no one's ever really gone. And so we're here to talk about an episode
as long
of Babylon
as there's
5.
Somebody to remember them.
Yes. But we're here to talk about an episode of the television series Babylon 5 from the Yum Yum perspective, because Yum Yum was a line of dialogue. We all remember the line of dialogue where in Star Trek Discovery, a character, a thing said Yum Yum rather randomly. Rather abruptly, it actually made me think, this is real, it made me think, is yum yum a phrase that you can use genuinely? And then ever since I've watched TV, I'll see people and shows and characters and so on say yum yum and I'll be like, ah, they said the thing, but they said it normally. And it's like, there's a way to do it normally? And I'm sure the guests that we have joining us can tell us about all the ways you can say yum yum in a normal context, which is for kings.
Yeah. Our first guest that's not from another podcast.
Is that true? Nick wasn't from another podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Pat, his brother wasn't from another podcast. But if they wanted...
No, but they...
Nick, yeah. And Pat, if you want to host a podcast called The Brothers at Infinite War, because you are always warring with each other, I'll listen to it. It sounds like a D&D podcast, honestly, but I wouldn't listen to that. But there are plenty. Will you be the next McElroys? Who knows? Find out. But we are joined by a sibling. Talk about siblings. I mean, Nick and Pat, they're siblings. They're twins. I mean, I'm not a twin. If only, though. Would I be the evil twin? I don't know. But I am joined by my older sibling. So old. Falling apart right in front of my eyes. Alana, you're here. Hello, Alana.
Hello.
How are you?
Not too bad. I am falling apart, though. That is true.
You are falling apart. When you first watched Babylon 5... How apart were you?
I was a child, a literal child. But recently, somebody did tell me that if I liked Sense8, I should check out this really old sci-fi that I may not have heard of because it's so old. And that was when I knew I too was one of the ancient ones. So I was like, well,
you're one of the first ones.
Yes.
And the twist was it was Crusade they recommended out of all of the ones you could go for.
I'm just here. We all of us have to be somewhere. This place seemed to be as good as any.
You mean you've been riding around in here all night? You like going nowhere at 120 miles an hour?
Of course.
Yes, Alana, we both grew up with Babylon 5, but your history is a little different to mine. I mainly remember watching them on the DVDs, and we had the big break between getting the first season and the second season. Like, it was like 3 years. But I do remember occasionally watching episodes on the videotape. I remember Comes the Inquisitor being the one that we watched the most. I remembered that one being on recorded off the television. But what about you? Tell us a bit more about your experience, because as we said, you're older, you're falling apart. So you were there more so than I was to see Babylon 5 in real time.
Exactly. I had to hope and pray our parents would remember to record it for me because it was just after I had to go to bed each night. So it was like a 50-50 split as to whether I'd have it recorded and I'd get to watch it the next day. But, yeah, all through primary school, my teachers had to deal with the fact that I had memorized the opening monologue for Babylon 5 and would tell them it.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It was particularly bad when we got to this season, which has, of course, the best.
It has the best.
It has the best opening monologue and that music.
Absolutely. Yep.
It relies on the first one being so good, too, though.
Mm. I have a follow-up question, which is, did they record over old episodes to give you the new ones? Or did you develop that unofficial collection of episodes?
Yeah, I don't know. What did they do? Tapes?
They didn't record over old episodes, I'm happy to say, but they did record just alongside other random pieces of media, which kind of ties into, I will always remember, I loved Major Payne when I was a child, but I had to fast forward through Eraserhead to get there.
Yes, that's exactly how it was. And you have like, you'd always know the end of Eraserhead because it would be like, oh, well, I don't want to fast forward too much and then miss the best part of Major Payne, the opening.
Exactly. So you had to get through the end of Eraserhead to get to your child-friendly movie.
The way Lynch wanted it.
Yes.
He wanted you to watch Major Payne afterwards. That's what Damon Wayans wanted. He wanted you to do it that way.
It was the obvious pairing.
So let's just get into the discussion, Rachel. You have the DVD description for this because we read the DVD description because it's art. Somebody wrote it. JMS, probably. Who else would it be?
He wrote everything else.
Statistically,
Statistically, it's him. He's to blame.
We are up to episode 15, Interludes and Examinations. Nothing succeeds like success. Knowing that a major victory over the Shadows will convince other worlds to join, Sheridan turns to the reclusive but extremely powerful Kosh for help.
Wow. And turn to him, he does. He, in fact, points at him and yells at him. Let's talk about history relationship with this episode. I mean, there's a point in season 3 where you said, well, they did it. They did all like the big story things. And now we're having like the King Arthur episode is a little bit of fun. And you're like, well, it's fine now. We did the breakaway from Earth and we'll wait to the end of the season to get all the big boys again. And this episode said, no. We're going to be back to the big boys right now, in fact. We're not going to wait till the third episode near the end. We're going to do this and then follow it up with a big two-parter and just keep ripping you to shreds. So my relationship is just, I'm still stunned that it's like, this episode just happens. You're just watching it. You're like, oh, yeah, I had the King Arthur episode. Oh, we're getting back to the story a bit. We had a Bester episode. Oh, that's cool. And then... And also, it's just, you don't expect Kosh to go, because Kosh has always been there, and he's always been like a character without actually being a character.
Even
and then...
though his life was the first one that was threatened, way back in the Gathering.
That's very true.
He's the one that faces death first out of our entire cast.
That is right. Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. And in all fairness, I didn't grow up with the Gathering all that much, so we just had the first season. So even then, it's just like, you can't take down Kosh. It's Kosh. But you feel something. What about you, Rachel? I mean, Kosh is an interesting character. And this episode is like, hey, it's about Kosh, kind of.
Yeah, Kosh is important, but not ever present in the episode. Like...
We do get some cutaway ominous shots of him.
Yeah, the episode revolves around him. I remember getting to the end and turning to you and going, what the fuck?
I know. And Londo becomes a bad boy again, like properly.
Yeah.
He commits to it this time.
One of the first instances of me going, Londo really learns the wrong lessons from things.
I remember you viscerally yelling at him and going, I'm off the team. You were very much from this point to like near the end of season.
I was so disappointed in him.
You to the end of season 4, you were very much like anti Londo. You were like, I hate this guy.
He's a piece of shit.
I hate him. I hope he gets a bad. You were like, I hope he dies.
Yeah, I wanted him to die. Because I was just like, you just like Sheridan's just got this like alliance and I was like, why weren't you there when Sheridan had his little speech where it's just like, actually, I don't know what the Shadows want, but they want to fuck everything up.
Well, he already knows this,
doesn't he? Yeah, but he's like, oh.
Adira.
But, like, it's specifically, like, around the idea of if we're involved, then they won't turn on us, contrasting with the Gammons. If we don't get involved, oh, yeah, they'll leave us alone.
The games, yeah. Oh, Neil Gaiman blushed that day when he saw those guys.
And it's just like, Londo, get the message.
But he's stupid.
I hate you. I hate you. I want you to go away so you don't fuck things up for other people. And I was firmly on Jakar's side. I was like, just learn the same lesson as Jakar.
But he wasn't manipulated by the Vorlons to learn it, so he won't. Now, Jakar isn't here, but there's a lot of other elements. Alana, what's your general relationship with this episode?
This episode surprises me every time, because I remember when you told me I will be watching Interludes and Examinations, and the name didn't ring a real bell. Mm. I looked at where it was in the season, and the name even makes it seem like, this is an interlude.
It's designed to be unimportant on the face of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. And then you mentioned also it's the one where Kosh dies, and I'm like, okay, are you sure? Fair enough. And yeah, a lot more happens in it. Mm. And even just going into that rewatch going, oh yeah, it's the one where Kosh and Adira die, I got a little bit tricked at the beginning because I was like, no, this is not that important feeling at all.
But we start out with the most ominous thing, an Ivanova monologue.
Yes.
Every time she does a monologue, it's very bad if an episode opens with an Ivanova monologue.
It's pretty much the entire cold open is her monologue. And the scenes where she's not monologuing are framed by her monologue.
It's also, I think it's the only... Ivanova is only in it as a monologue as well. She's just not in the episode at all, which...
Well, that's okay. She set the tone.
Yeah.
She did.
So far, we've got everything more or less under control. We should be okay for now. As long as nothing else goes wrong.
We ask this question. Who has YYE, Yum Yum Energy?
Oh, God.
Who in this... who in this episode would have said Yum Yum?
Morden, definitely Morden.
Morden.
Yeah, Morden's always a contender. Mm. Londo, when he's like, and let the galaxy burn.
Yum, yum. Yep. Well, but I see Morden when he's going to talk to the rose seller.
Well, that's
sneakily get the information.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was my contender. Mm. The guy selling the roses. Talking to Via, being like, oh, you can't go wrong with garters. Yum, yum.
Yes, a fine bottle of Brevari.
Oh, there's a lot of candidates. I mean, even Kosh had his little moments. Well, I could hear him saying it. Final words. Yum, yum. As his dad in his brain.
Can you imagine if one of the Volon ships projected the message of yum yum in
that
Vorlon
language
on
their skin.
Sheridan, but like this the one time that they do it in English.
That'll be fine, yeah.
Sheridan when he's getting hit against the wall by Kosh, just as a power move.
Yum yum.
Yum yum. Lick spit of blood from lip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of
says,
half yours, it's yum yum.
Disobedient. Yum yum.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's actually the moment, because in Star Trek Discovery it's like, hey, random character, do you want to kill the antagonist? And she licks her lips with, you know, flicks her hair back, and she says, yum, yum. And it's like, well, you know what? Weirdly, Dark Horse candidate Sheridan?
I mean,
he always has YYE because he's always got a glass of orange juice nearby, and he's always wanting to have a sip and go, yum, yum. But no, let's get into Londo. He's here. He's happy. He started out season one. His job was to spread happiness to the rest of the station, and now season three, his job is to let the galaxy burn because he doesn't care anymore.
He lost the one thing he loved, and that always gets me. That always gets me because it's like, yeah, you did see her as a thing, but she's a person.
Oh, he saw her more than that. He definitely saw her as a person, but he also takes responsibility. So let's go to the beginning, Rachel. He's happy.
Yeah, he's happy. Adira is finally coming back to him. We get some very convenient flashback shots in black and white.
Hey, for
just in case you've forgotten or you weren't watching the show.
It was 3 years earlier for people in real time, and they didn't just have the ability to you know, watch it again easily. No. Not everyone.
No. So he is very excited and enlisting Veer's help because, you know, Veer got demoted.
He's back to where he was.
So been a little lackey. He's having to set up Londo's sex pad, sparing no expense. When they're really, really leaning on the undertone or overtone, if you've watched all of the show, of Veer being essentially a virgin.
Yeah, he's a little weaselly virgin. Yep. He's like, I don't know, the things.
I know.
Things. Just get the things. Oh.
Just gives the list.
I particularly adore little touches. Like, he's getting the flowers and he's getting the star laces that Adira likes. I was like, hey, look, they still have the same crappy little props, but hey, they're back. Mm. And it's so sweet to see that. And I do enjoy the comedy between Veer and this just random flower guy. This random, not even flower. Well, we already had a flower guy earlier in the season. This is just a random.
Yeah, it's
merchant.
Not a florist.
Yes, he's just a.
He's
know.
A general trader because he's getting all of the things for the sex pad.
we're all doing a rewatch, and I got to say, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Alana. One of my favorite things about B5, well, one of them, one of the things that makes a station alive is that we can just have this guy show up. He's a one-time wonder, and yet he has a quirk. He has a little personality. He has like a thing happening.
And you imagine him still being a part of the station once this episode's done. Like, he's still off.
Yeah, he's still there. He's got enough personality that you always, well, when I first watched it as a child, he's got enough personality that it makes you think, have I seen this guy before in the show already?
Yeah.
Probably.
It's like, yeah. Does he work with Vicar? Maybe.
Oh, don't bring a Vicar back up. I miss him.
Oh, that's a character that definitely should have happened again, though.
Oh, he should have been the main character in season 5.
What's the time at Sunspot the drink?
Jovian.
Sunspot.
Jovian Sunspot. But yet, like, the thing that I like about the series is just, like, you have all these background people in their life, like, you have all of these background aliens, and so even if you don't know their name, you're familiar with them. You're like, oh, look, they're the bug people, and there's the Drazi, and there's the
Nun.
Yeah,
like, we've
seen
the Gaimans around.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and this is the first time they've spoken.
Yes.
We have that at the beginning with just Sheridan, and they're all clicky. You know that they're bugs even more so, even though they look like it.
This is those are the aliens with the head that gets called out as being a ripoff of Sandman's helmet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Classic.
Yes, and of course, those fools don't know that JMS and Gaiman are joined by the hip. Mm-hmm. You wait till season 5, everyone. You're going to get a real surprise. But
Adira comes back.
We get probably the funniest moment in the episode with Veer, where Veer sees Morden, and he's just like, no.
But, like, I love the sort of just visual storytelling of he sees Morden and he goes the opposite direction. and then he's so annoyed when Morden just rounds the corner with that smile. And it's just like, oh, punch him. Please. Please. Just. Actually, no. Morden is a man that deserves to be slapped.
He is a slappable face.
He looks like he's been slapped.
Face. He does. Yeah. Someone's given him a good one at one point.
And like, a good, like, full-on slap and then a backhand on the other cheek.
And they did, and they didn't take the ring off.
I feel like it would be, Talia. It would be Talia Winters. I could see Talia slapping him.
She did slap because of Morden, remember?
Yeah.
To Sheridan, take that. Oh, but of course, Alana, what does Veer and Morden have to say to each other here?
The classic, what do you want?
How can I help?
How can I help?
Die?
Short of dying.
Can't think of a thing.
Just die.
Just die.
This is the thing about Veer, right? Like, he's so sweet, but when he doesn't like a person, he really lets them know. Like, Reefer, he doesn't like Reefer, so he won't pour his drink. And Morden, every single time, he's like, I will just insult you and you will do nothing.
He will not pretend.
And it's been getting worse and worse.
Yeah.
At first, he doesn't like to talk to Morden, and now he's just getting openly No, I hate you.
He's already said that he wants to see his head on a spike.
Mm. Oh, and he'll have that reward soon.
He will get it. He will get it. So Londo good. Does something right in the mm-hmm. end. But, maybe a little.
Maybe just a tad. Just but a like, tad.
It doesn't work. It works out well for Via. It slightly works out in the short term for Londo. Does not help the Centauri people in general.
No, no.
That kind of sums up Londo.
That's Londo.
Yeah.
Did you ever think that Adira was going to show up in the episode?
I did as a child. I was easily tricked.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I thought she would because she was such a prominent character. I didn't think that
I was like,
we
oh,
would not get her.
And you're showing us her again.
Yeah.
Like, you are making it very clear, and you have already paid off other things and brought characters back around that we thought that we would never see again.
Mm.
But also, it's like, well, you aren't afraid to kill people.
Mm.
But I definitely wasn't expecting it. But as soon as Morden entered and then we saw her dead, I was like, oh, Please, Londo, figure it out that it was fucking Morden. He threatened you at the start of this episode.
No, but it's for poison,
poison, so he makes it reefer.
Mm-hmm. I did think she would turn up, just because she was such a prominent guest star in that first time. And so I was like, well, they wouldn't waste that. They would bring her back, which they do.
They do a lot of work to set her up.
Yeah, I just assumed that it would be like, I mean, I guess it makes sense. Like, obviously, they would kill her because, you know, it's a show and you have to motivate Londo to be shittier. So you got to kill the girl he likes. Mm. And it's a good motivator for him because he's very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And you get that when you have him. And again, the writing tells you very much so. Londo's like, Via, I'm happy. And it's like, no, Londo, don't do that.
It's
don't
dangerous
be happy.
For anybody to be openly happy. Maybe that's why Sheridan and Len are like, you know, we're going to take this really slow. Any happiness is dangerous and usually fleeting in this place.
Yep, just look at Dodger.
Look at Dodger. That's Babylon 5. They do the pendulum swing. From scene to scene, we'll end with, like, things are really happy, and then it'll be the next thing is really sad. It'll be like, it's really happy, and then it's really sad. Yeah. It's like, we got a victory against the shadows. Yay! And then, well, it just...
But even, like, the change from, like, the tone of Ivanova's monologue to setting up this stuff with Londo.
Yeah, Londo's Londo. He's just doing Londo things and being all wacky, and then by the end of the episode... He's like, no, guys, I'm the antagonist of the show.
And
never forget that.
No, you'll never know. You'll never know where Londo's going to go. Londo's going to make the wrong choice. That's what Londo's going to do.
And then, obviously, we get him and Via waiting. Hey, where's Adira at? I don't see Adira around.
We couldn't have missed her.
I forgot this little touch, actually, where the guy at Londo asked if anyone's behind you was the guy that killed her.
Yeah.
That was a nice touch. That slipped my brain, and then when it happened, like, oh, see? Again, fleshing it out, bringing it a bit more into the... And I love that Morden has a day where he keeps exchanging the same little crystals and diamonds to people. He just keeps getting his jewels back.
Yeah.
This time, you know, he gave that guy the jewels. We don't know if he got those jewels back from him, but you assume so. It's been this episode is Morden had a really good day.
Oh, he was very pleased with himself. And his Spidey people would have been very pleased with him as well. And clicking in the background.
Is it silly to you, Alana, or is it cool that Morden has shadows to the left and to the right of him at all times? And does it make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. Being that smug, you have to have backup at hand constantly. Yeah. Otherwise, yes, he'd have been slapped a lot more.
Do they phase through things? How does he walk in, like, crowds of people?
You know, I'd never actually considered that, but they don't seem to phase through doors. Whenever we can see them, they go through doorways, which maybe they crawl along the ceiling a lot more.
Will that be fun?
Yeah.
My associates need a voice and an ear in the Centauri Royal Court. If you violate the terms of our agreement, my associates may turn their eye toward your homeworld.
Then we shall pluck it out.
You have moments like this where he goes, nothing matters to me, so everything's up for grabs. But the show keeps coming back to, no, 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 Londo, you think that, but here's a new thing. Like, next season, it will be the Mad Emperor, and it'll force Londo to care about the stability of his people. And
but
you keep having
he
that.
He does that. He's always consistent with that, because even though he says, like, as long as you can guarantee me the safety of my people, the rest of the galaxy
can
burn. He wants his people to be safe and to be glorious.
But sometimes
he's
through
just
that,
an old Republican.
He's an old Republican dreaming of better days.
But He often forgets how important his people are.
Well, through those journeys, he learns often that other people are important. So we'll see how he'll learn how Jakar's important, and he'll see him as a person and see him as an equal and even better than him, perhaps. And he'll
that
see,
nephew.
And he'll see.
That never comes back.
Yeah. And or we'll see later on, too, like he believes in the Interstellar Alliance. And even though that's something that would. And on we go. I think it's just good to have that because. The message of the series to me in a lot of ways, and we see it in this episode, is there is no point of where you go, nothing matters. Because you look at the Vorlons, and they always come across like nothing matters to them. Like, everything's inferior, everything's... But this is the episode where Kosh says, you're right, things matter. Mm. And there are going to be consequences to me believing that. But even the ancient old god with the silly little head and the tubes that go in and out of him and wiggle about... He cares. There are things that are like, this is important. You can't just be like Londo where it's like, nothing matters, only revenge, because that leads to nothing other than ruin. And I think that's a rather interesting little thing, because this episode's made up of like three primary plots where characters are having to confront something about themselves, and do they learn the right thing or not? And Londo, of course, is the morality play here where it's like, this is the bad ending.
Mm.
This is the one where you learn the wrong thing.
Yeah. And it's sort of a part of what the show toys with a lot and goes back to a lot is like the Vorlon and the Shadows questions of who are you and what do you want? And the danger in responding to that in certain ways of... The Vorlons are, they say that they know who they are, but they don't enact their values, and that becomes really dangerous.
They only do it selfishly.
They only do it selfishly, and what Londo wants is also deeply selfish and thus inherently dangerous.
And he's easy to manipulate.
As well. And Sheridan is being selfless.
Mm-hmm. He's thinking of
and saying,
others.
He's showing who he is by telling Kosh what he wants.
And then you have Franklin there where he's having to figure out himself.
Yeah.
He ends, you know, we'll get to his story, but
he's trying to juggle those two questions himself of like, who am I when I'm not a doctor and what do I want from my life?
And he doesn't know. He's the one who's like, I have no clue. I need to figure that out. Let's see in the rest of the season where he goes.
And in many ways, I think Franklin was trying to be selfless by throwing himself as far into his work as he did, but he actually kind of tripped by not trusting others to help him, which I think is another big through line of the whole thing, that we can't just do everything ourselves.
No,
that's another falling point.
Community is a strength of humanity as well as, like, everything in existence. When we work together, we can create a better good for everybody. And we can only truly achieve that when we work together.
Franklin's story is something that I, as I get older, the more I like it and love it. And it just...
Hurts
so much more because when I was younger,
it gets better each rewatch.
When I was younger, it was like, oh, look, Franklin's cool. I don't hate the guy. He's fine. Like, I usually like the Doctor characters in my sci-fi, but for him, it was just like, eh, he's fine. I'm here for all of the extravagant sci-fi things because his story is just a human story. It was just like, oh, he got addicted to drugs and now he needs to figure it out. It wasn't as as thrilling as...
sci-fi drugs.
Yeah. But it's not as thrilling as Londo is now going to make the galaxy burn, and where's he going to go, and Kosh is this ancient alien being, and now the Vorlon's getting involved in this intergalactic war, and all
so
of that.
So many great monologues in this episode.
Oh, that's and that, JMS having
like,
time.
I know that we mentioned it, but I do just want to say I fucking love the monologue that Ivanova gives. Like, it really does set up the episode really well, but it's so true to Ivanova.
Yeah, I think there's a lot told about the Franklin journey here in those visuals, because when he is freaking out or when we are on him, we're extreme close-ups and it's uncomfortable when he's screaming, 13! Yeah. I said 13! But when there are scenes between him and Garibaldi, it's a wide shot and they're far away, which is just a visual telling you their relationship is getting further away from each other because you have that
their
scene
distance
in...
and there's this all of this stuff in between them, but... You feel the distance when, like, Garibaldi is talking to Hobbs in that sort of, like, near the Zocalo area, and Franklin walks in and sort of, like, figures out that Garibaldi's really sniffing around. Mm-hmm. You get that, like, kind of wide shot establishing their, like, their relationship to each other physically, but that reference to the... emotional connection or lack of emotional connection, and then it goes in on Franklin.
And you're just seeing how haggard he is. Franklin as a character alone.
But also, like, how pissed.
Oh, he's pissed in this episode.
And
I love angry
indignant.
Franklin.
Like, how dare you go behind my back? And it's just in the performance of the actor and their trust. That he'll pull it off.
Oh, he's great.
Mm.
He was great from the beginning. Richard Biggs was like the actor who plays a human who knew their character from the beginning, I think. But Alana Franklin, what has been your overall experience with this character?
He's a character I've really grown to like as I've gotten older. As a child, I hated Franklin. I couldn't stand his storyline. All I saw was someone told you have a drug addiction. You should notice this by now. And then he goes, oh, I think I have a problem. I'm like, cool. It took you a little while. But
yay!
And then a few episodes later, he's like, oh, wait, no, I actually have a problem. As a child, I found that infuriating. I was like, we've been over this story beat, guys. Come on.
Yeah. People do this.
Exactly.
This is how people act when you call them out on their bullshit. And then they're like, no, that's not my bullshit.
But then later,
they're like, maybe it is my bullshit.
But even then, he goes back and changes his mind a little. And now, as an adult, I'm like, oh, wait, that's a very realistic kind of storyline to follow through. And I appreciate that a lot more.
But as a child, you want the narrative version
of it. Just move on. And I think a lot of TV shows these days will just have that one defining moment where a character's like, oh, I have a problem. And then they instantly swap things around, as opposed to Franklin's story, which was a lot more realistic.
Every intervention works perfectly.
Yeah, everyone. It's amazing.
It's just like...
And they're far more...
Definitely not like their How I Met Your Mother episode, where they get addicted to having interventions for everybody.
And interventions are... They solve it. Usually. Well, Garibaldi tried.
He had multiple interventions.
Garibaldi tried and it didn't work fully.
Reached out. And the fact that Garibaldi is the one that is reaching out, the one that can see the problem because he is an addict.
Exactly. And I really liked how they did that with Garibaldi's character. When we first got introduced to the fact that he was an alcoholic, the logical assumption is, we're going to have to deal with that and only that. That's the only way your plot beat of being an alcoholic is going to happen.
Yes, it's going to be his defining character.
It was so nice to see part of his defining characteristic come up in a different way. He is able to help others based on what we could see as a weakness, a flaw in him.
It doesn't just matter that he's an alcoholic. It matters that he's an alcoholic in recovery.
He can talk to Franklin like nobody else in our cast of characters can talk to Franklin because he has an understanding. And as well as he's your usual empathetic, I'm your here for you buddy, Garibaldi, but also like even him being the chief of security grilling you factors like, into the conversation.
This is a liability for the station and for me if this keeps on going.
Mm.
Like, I'm trying to nip this in the bud because I would rather this not become a problem.
Also,
each time he comes back to Franklin, it is a bigger deal.
And it's a great thing that this whole storyline was not done as a single very special episode.
No. It really matters that it's sprinkled throughout and it relies on other things.
Mm-hmm.
But if you miss those episodes, because that's just a fact of when this show came out, you still feel like, yeah, this all works. This all makes sense.
Mm.
There is something to be said, too, about the almost criticism that this story has of the Doctor archetypes or the Doctor characters in these shows, in these sci-fi shows.
I am the one to save everybody.
Where we cheer them on for sacrificing everything about themselves because they solve the plague at the very end of the episode and everything's okay and yay. And they destroyed themselves and it was wonderful because they're brilliant.
Mm.
It's Bashir. He's so brilliant. He's a genetically modified man. He's so
Babylon
wow.
5 always wants you to know that there's a cost.
Mm. Yeah, and it's not cool. It's not cool to do this, like to be this, you know, to go to this level. There's something beyond just being virtuous and selfless. In fact, we hear it. He's running away from himself, and that's his character. He would run away all the time. He would get on a transport ship and hitchhike across because he's always running from the himself in some way, shape, or form.
He won't confront himself.
But he has the capacity to. That's what makes him a fascinating character. It's not as if his character is solely like he's always avoiding everything of himself. Like when you have episodes like when his dad comes on board, he's willing to give it a shot, but it's hard to do it. Like that's what makes him feel
the
more realistic.
The habit of avoidance is there and deeply ingrained. Mm. And it's really fascinating looking back on that episode with his dad. Because it's not just that he doesn't want to face the problems that he's having with his dad. He doesn't want to face the part of himself that is in conflict with that part of his dad.
And Franklin is a character who stands up for what he believes in. He's the character that says, I don't like what's happening with the telepath. I'm not going to just say, I don't like it. I'm going to actively do something. I'm going to actively do something about I'm going to actively help the lurkers. I'm going to actively not pick sides of like humans and aliens. Like I'm going to...
Life.
I'm life
there
is life.
To protect life.
Yet when it comes to his own well-being?
No.
He can't do it.
No.
He pushes it to the side because everyone else is more important.
I can save others.
Maybe you've noticed, maybe you haven't, but I haven't been doing as good a job around here as I should have. Kept wanting to do more, and I ended up doing less. It's ironic, you know? When I look in the mirror, I don't see me. I see the job. I was the job. Nothing else mattered.
My favorite scene in this episode was the scene where Garibaldi confronted him in his quarters and Franklin's got his shirt off. He's just come out of a shower. You're like, oh, he's surprisingly ripped.
Yep. Every time he has his shirt off, I'm like, oh, yeah, you are surprisingly ripped.
You are surprisingly ripped,
sir. You get more and more shirtless Franklin.
Like, thank you.
They've done the first one now and they're like, oh, he'll do this? This is great.
Everybody's happy, but... that conversation is just well written, well played. These actors know each other so well that they can just bounce off of each other. It's not melodramatic. It's sad. Mm. That's the thing. It's just, it's really sad to watch these two come at each other and Franklin is rejecting it and Garibaldi may have to do his job to get this sorted out and he doesn't want to do it. And again, that unique dynamic of having these two characters where one of them is a recovering addict. He understands this process. He gets it. He knows what's happening here. He's trying to reach out to Franklin, but Franklin doesn't know. Like, he hasn't come to terms with it. And by the end of the episode, he will. He'll look at it. But that scene is just...
I love the relationship, too, because you know they're good friends, but just being good friends wasn't enough to get through to Franklin, so Garibaldi's now had to shift tax a little bit into more of a professional realm.
And to your point earlier, when you're watching this younger and you're like, we've already hit this beat, we've already done this, the thing that you notice when you're looking at it later in life and when you're more understanding of how stories are told is, no, it's the same discussion, but they're different tacks. Garibaldi's coming at it in a different way than he did in that previous episode. And Franklin is coming at it in a different way. In that previous one, Franklin is like, yells at him and has a jab at him, but then he apologizes. In this one, he's not apologizing. He's like, leave me the fuck alone. Why are you always at me? Every 15 minutes, I just have you riding my ass, just saying, get off these stims. I'm fine.
I have a question for both of you. And this is something that I questioned on my first watch, but on subsequent ones, it's something that I don't really wonder about, which is when Garibaldi is in Medlab and he's about to put in the coats that Hobbs has given him, and then he stops. The first time that I watched it, I was like, did he stop because he wanted to stop or because he noticed Franklin?
I thought he noticed Franklin.
Yeah, I never thought about it. I took him at his word, and I still do in this.
I take him at his word now, but I think that there is that part of his brain that goes...
Yeah, the part called Mr. Wizard, yeah.
Well, also...
We know that he's not good at watching his back. Walker Smith told us this.
We know that, but by the same token, Medlab is full of reflective surfaces.
No, but he's about to learn the lesson with the post office man.
Yeah. He did learn that lesson with the post office man.
Yeah. So maybe he's just like, you know what? That guy was there that time. Maybe.
I do adore, though, that conversation too, where Franklin asks him why did I do it or why did I not do it. Yeah.
Oh, I love that line so much.
But I like the line that Garibaldi...
It's so Garibaldi.
Mm-hmm. I like the line that he follows up after, because it's true, which is the whole sentiment and statement about, well, I've already told you, like, if you can't trust me, your friend, to tell you this, then me just digging up this evidence isn't going to sway you any. Like, me just doing this is more for my own benefit than it is really yours in the end.
You need to come to this problem, not me come to you.
Because if you can't accept it from me coming at you from a place of friendship, me coming at you from a place where I've just smacked down the data isn't going to help you. And I like that, because you can tell, like, he's an addict, you know, recovering addict. He knows that, like, that's not going to be beneficial. And also, as him as a person, he still doesn't want to be chief of security Garibaldi solving this case. He wants to be the friend. He wants to be the guy that hopes that that Franklin will figure it out. I'm curious to know, Alana, what do you think about how Franklin approaches... like, how he comes at the revelation that he's an addict? Because he walks in and he says, well, I've already looked at it myself, because I wanted to prove you wrong. How do you feel about how he unfurls the information? Because he gets very scientific about it, very math-based.
He does, and I like that. It felt like he was convincing himself again and again.
Yeah.
As he explained it to Garibaldi, he was kind of explaining it to himself.
Like, oh, I really have to face this now. I am trained to look at this in a certain way, and I can't look away now.
I've given myself a lot of excuses for a lot of other parts of this, but I can't give myself an excuse for this. I can't figure one out, so I have to just face it.
Yeah.
And he still approaches it as a scientist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, which is the problem. Like, who is he?
He's coming at it as a doctor still. Like, coming at his problem in the way that's caused these problems is the only way that he recognizes that he has a problem.
Yep. And big reminder that we've also had the foreshadowing of the other doctor with stim problems.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And again...
Dr. Kyle?
Again, no, Dr. Kyle, and also Dr. mother from Lost in Space, June Lockhart.
Yeah.
That's what happened to her. She went through this, and he was like, ha, that won't happen to me. That's so silly. No, how could that ever happen to somebody? How could that, somebody let themselves get like that?
Franklin, it's you, buddy.
It's funny how easy it is to just lose track. You don't realize how much you're doing.
But the numbers don't lie, do they?
No, they don't.
Franklin is a story that, yeah, I'm really loving. I love that character a lot. I know a lot of people, yeah, they hate Franklin. They think he's arrogant, or they don't feel sympathy for him, or they just don't know why his story's here. Again, I think it just gives this expansive feel to a series where we have a large ensemble. So you can have a smorgasbord of different type of stories with different types of tones. You can have wacky little comedy plots, but also you can have the I'm addicted to drugs and I don't know what to do, whilst also in the same episode have the big war between the aliens is kicking off to a degree even more so. The Shadow War has officially begun and Londo's doing this because this is a show with very skilled hands when it comes to catering to all of these different things. Because, yeah, there are those people who may not like the Franklin stuff, but guess what? It's not the whole episode.
Mm. Nope.
It's one of the bits. And we've talked about, too, sometimes, you wish that things could be a whole episode. Like, when we watch Star Trek Discovery, we go, oh, this could be a whole episode. Why is it only one of five stories? Pacing and balancing things out is very important, because Babylon 5 can do that, where we can have so many of these, but then a reward you go, hey, maybe this whole episode will be Franklin on a walkabout.
Mm-hmm.
There you go, we're now doing that. Or maybe this whole episode will be, wouldn't it be cool if the whole episode is Sheridan getting interrogated? Like, and you're like, wouldn't that be
whole A or B plot or, a lot of the time.
Or wouldn't it be great if this whole episode was an ISN report? Like, you will get those.
Yes.
As well as just what we get here, where you have machine gun firing through like so many plots, where each scene is probably less than 90 seconds long, and you bam, 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 bam.
Lots of variation in the length, duration, and purpose of scenes, but there's always like at this stage in the show, and it only gets better. Like season four is no filler.
Old killer.
Oh, so good. But every single scene at a certain point in Babylon 5 has such a clear purpose.
Mm.
And the length of that scene reflects its purpose. Mm. So it's not like, oh, we're going to have some fun banter because these characters were having fun and they did improv, or we need to stretch to this time limit. It's just like, no, we need to get this point across and this needs to matter to set up this thing. And it becomes a part of the whole, which makes it greater than the sum of its parts so much more than it's not. The further that you get into the series,
you have to have something to say. So we often think of the monologues.
Mm.
Oh, all these great monologues. Time the monologues. They're really short, but they're memorable and they feel big because there's something to be said in them. The big moment of this, like you could argue the two big moments of the episode that you remember is Sheridan yelling at Kosh and then Kosh appearing as his dad.
Mm.
Those are big moments because they're saying important things. But when you time them, they're really not that long.
No.
They're short and sweet, but they're the point.
Impactful. So it's not just how long it's on screen. It's how long it stays in your mind.
Yeah, and some shows can be very guilty, especially if they're wordy shows like Babylon 5 is. This is written by a writer. They fall into the trap of, oh, if I just write really long things, that means it's really important. Mm. But really,
substantial is substantive, right? Mm-hmm.
But here we have the Kosh stuff, and I want to say this is a Kosh, it's like a big Kosh episode, but it's just as big as everything else here. But it feels huge because we don't get Kosh-focused stuff as often, if ever, because he's always been in the background because that's his role. He is, yeah. Don't look at me. I'm just pulling strings over here.
He's the puppet master and you're not meant to see them. You're not meant to notice the strings. You're meant to enjoy the performance of the puppets.
Alana, I got to ask you. You and I think, are very similar when it came to when our younger days of watching these sci-fi shows. There's always that part of, at least me, where you wanted them to do the war stuff. Like, when are they actually going to fight? Because it was always like TNG's like...
get a big fucking battle.
To me, it's because of TNG being like, the Romulans are this ongoing threat that we'll come to one day. Nope.
No, nothing.
The Borg will... No.
Oh, we got Wolf 359.
Yeah, yeah, off screen.
Off screen.
And it was only those two episodes, and the Borg were in descent, kind of. And but you never got like the full-fledged until like later Deep Space Nine. Mm. And Babylon 5 was very much teasing, teasing, teasing. Here... it's on the table now. We're kicking off. Here the shadows are. They're attacking. Everybody
direct
knows.
Direct confrontation.
Who they are.
Finally here.
Yep.
And it's just the start.
It's just the start, and it's surrounded by amazing things happening for all of the characters you care about. So you know that it's not just going to be, you know, space fights with characters you don't care about like Kefa.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not just going to be laser, shooty, shooties. You are invested.
And it avoids that thing that does happen when you do get, like, the war of you only care about what's happening in the war.
Mm.
Where, like, I love that in Babylon 5, it's like the war is going on, but so are people's lives.
Mm.
And their lives are not just the war, because it's just like Babylon 5 is their home and has been for a really long time, and it's within this context, but it doesn't become just about the war.
But the war does influence everything around the characters.
Yes.
I mean, it's because of the war in many ways that Franklin starts his stim problem, because we see how being cut off from Earth has made Medlab get more and more overwhelmed.
And it's been his coping mechanism with stress from the very beginning.
So now add seeing death as well from the Centauri War, because he saw nothing but death. A lot of, like, reflected gods,
it's
Susan.
Just compounding all of these issues within the characters as well. So we get this really great external conflict that all of these characters are dealing with. And the way that they're dealing with them is creating these own internal conflicts and other external conflicts. Like, Sheridan feels hopeless, and that makes him fucking pissed. And that is a large part of why he goes and confronts Kosh. And he isn't willing to give up, even though he's having this huge interaction with a being that he has no idea.
He knows nothing about
what Kosh is capable of. And we get that built up even more by the sort of nebulous of, like, there's a power drain and we don't know where it's coming from.
I thought that was 90s cheese to the max. I love that way.
I fucking loved it.
That was great.
But again, war is difficult. And the difficulties that the
complicated.
And this is Babylon 5. Can we get peace? Can we survive a war? The difficulties isn't the villains have a super weapon that we must stop. Oh no. The difficulty
no Death Stars here.
The difficulty is every person has their own interests, has their own things. We can't just say, hey everyone, the big bad guy is obviously attacking us all. Let's just band together. And everyone goes, yes, please. Everyone has something that they need. So Sheridan can't just have it easy. On paper, like, you as a person goes, oh, it should be. But that's not how it is. And that's what makes it difficult. That's what makes the war even more of a struggle, is he has to convince these people to work together. They need something. They need a win. And
the other The other thing is, Babylon 5 has spent so much time world building outside of just Babylon 5, giving these characters connections to other people, other parts of society.
The galaxy.
Exactly. It's not like in Star Trek when Wolf 359 rocked up and you're like, oh yeah, there's a lot of ships. We may have even met one of those ships. I don't know. In Babylon 5, you're like, oh, I've seen what happens when the grunts go down onto a planet and they just all get wrecked.
Yeah, and what happens when a shadow ship cuts something in half, you know?
Yeah. We also know, like, we've also found out in recent episodes that, well, what about all the telepath blips?
Mm-hmm.
Well, like, we know some blips.
Right. Yeah, and to humanize, again, when you have these big galactic war things, sometimes the science fiction genre can be very guilty of forgetting to make the characters feel human. They are just perfect. They are just they're an allegory, or they're a theme, or they're a metaphor, or they're a message, rather than a human. Sheridan is like a super genius military mind. What I really like, though, it's not him yelling at Kosh, which is awesome. What I really liked is him saying to Delenn that he feels guilty and that he's lying to them when he says that he can make a win happen because he doesn't believe it.
Mm.
I like that a lot because
he knows
Sheridan,
that he can't do it on his own.
And it shows that he does think outside of, you know, the bigger, he thinks in the bigger picture, but he still is a human. He's still just a dude. He's still one man. And he feels the personal responsibility, like Franklin feels the personal responsibility, like so on and so forth. And he feels the personal responsibility of, like, I'm saying that we could do this, but I don't think we can, and I feel guilty because I'm lying to them.
I just want to say one more thing about that scene in particular, because I just swooned during that scene and was for such an oddly specific thing that I wanted to make sure to bring it up. The Delenn is being mystical theme song that goes under her replying to him.
The wind chime noises.
Like, yeah, I legitimately, like, grasped at my heart because I was just like, this is perfect and I love it. It's so Delenn being Delenn.
Well, no, yeah, and then it's like, no, she sounds like Kosh. Why is everyone these days talking like Kosh?
Yeah, and then it switches, but, like, just the little, like, twinkly music under her saying it. I loved it so much.
And I mean this with highest...
It made me so happy.
I mean this with highest praise to Bruce Boxleitner, but he makes Sheridan so dumb sometimes.
Because
there's that moment where he goes... Kosh! And then you see his face figure out, like, I should go talk to Kosh, but he's got such a dumb little puppy face, and it makes Sheridan adorable in a way, where you go, he's not just this Superman.
But what's worse?
What?
I feel like I'm lying to them. I mean, you've seen the reports from the front lines. Yes, I have ideas. Some possibilities. But at this moment, the stone cold fact is that none of us can stand up to those ships.
We get that back and forth between Kosh and Sheridan, and it has one of my favorite little details, which is Kosh moves really fast when he's given his response, like, I'm done now. And you see, you've never seen him move that fast. So you really are bought into the scene. You're like, oh, what? Because it's extremely satisfying because he's saying, Sheridan's saying
such
everything that you wanted characters to say, because Kosh stands there looking cryptic and everyone has to take it because,
oh, it's the Vorlon.
It's the Vorlons.
The Vorlon's most powerful. We don't know what they're capable of.
I mean, the season...
Well, fucking show me, bitch.
Season 5.
Show me. Bitch, slap me.
So good.
Mark on my cheek that stays.
I do like that it stays. It's a little season 5's opening credits even know what the best line in this scene is, which is, get off your encountered suited butts and do something.
That was so
yes!
good.
He's, oh, it's so good.
And Bruce Boxleitner is having to act against a thing without a face, and yet he makes it so real.
You don't question in that moment that he's not talking to Kosh.
Yeah, and that Kosh is this disembodied voice and he's still doing the thing.
Yeah.
Impudent. That's my favorite line from Kosh.
I love the sort of choreography with what we imagine to be Kosh's eye and, like, the way that it goes, like, in and out and the way that, like, the color behind like the squiggly lines somehow communicate anger. And I'm like, why does this make sense to me?
Mm-hmm.
This seems utterly ridiculous that I'm looking at these squiggly lines inside, like, his orifice, his little sphincter.
Yep.
That's
it's an aperture.
Opening and retracting and going, oh, gosh, he's pissed.
Yeah.
Like, well, if you said that to somebody, they would be like, what the fuck are you on about, you weirdo?
But the thing that's very important in this sequence is... Kosh has feelings.
Yeah. Kosh has feelings.
He's angry.
You don't get that often.
And he's upset. And not just that, but you see him change his point of view in the scene.
He's no longer willing to be impartial, which is all that we've seen the Vorlons do as represented by Kosh. Because he's the only Vorlon that we've seen.
Mm.
He's the only Vorlon that we know.
And he's spouting the party line throughout this whole entire conversation of, no, we're not ready. It's your time now. And what is this, Kosh? This is a war that you want us to fight. You're supposed to help us, aren't you?
And
it's like, oh, no, there's only so
few
of us.
It's their war.
Yeah, that's the funniest thing is it is their fault. Oh, everything's their fault. And Kosh is like, no, no, it's your time now.
I just love how emotional.
You're on the front lines now.
I was just going to say, I love the emotion you finally get out of Kosh, because before now, I'm going to say that Kosh's ship has shown more emotion than Kosh.
Yes.
Yeah, and you get the force choke in and the slaps with energy beams on Sheridan, and Sheridan just says it like, kill me now. Just, what's the point? Like, I'm dead anyway. You know, just come at me,
like,
bro.
My life is fucking shit anyway. This is the last play that I have. And that is so different than Londo being like, this is my last play with Morden.
And the classic thing, Sheridan brings it up, and this is what really unravels the whole Shadow War when we find out the big picture, which is, how many bodies?
Mm.
Till you step in. Where's the line? Who's making these calls?
Hmm.
This needs to end now. Like, what's
the
whole point?
The homeworld wasn't enough.
Wasn't enough, and that just makes you think about the whole futility and silliness of this war that they're fighting, because when does it end? What's the point?
Especially
where are we going with this? Like, what are we doing here?
Rewatch
Kosh?
Perspective. We know that it's a war of ideological ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's them and their ideas that they're letting fight out through these proxy wars, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that can go on forever.
I also think about how JMS is a big history fan, and he looks at the Shadow War and the Vorlon War, and they come at it, we learn this over time, but they approach it like this nostalgic idea of what we think war used to be, where there were rules, we were all gentlemanly, you after this, and blah, 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 blah. But
we met on a battle, we agreed on a time, you wore these colours, we wore these colours, and...
Yes, we won't attack each other directly.
We out.
The Shadows and the Vorlons agreed, we won't attack each other directly, and once that happens, well, the gloves are off now, but... It's silly. That's not how it really works. Once you're in, you have to go somewhere. It can't just be gentlemanly, oh, yes. It's not a game.
Mm.
And that's how they play it. They play it like it's a fun little game for each other.
I think it is now time to discuss Kosh's death scene.
Ooh.
I love this scene for what it doesn't show.
Mm. His death?
Mm.
Him, like, getting ripped apart by shadows?
Because...
Him getting scorched?
Oh, yeah. But it is so tension-filled, even after you know that he's dead, because of the way that it's shot, the way that it's framed. And it doesn't make sense for this angelic being to have a body that is destroyed.
No sign of a body.
You will not find one.
Then how do you know he's dead?
I know. So did the Vorlons, somehow.
They asked us to keep this to ourselves. They grieve for the death of Kosh as much as we do. But they know that the alliance we have formed with the other worlds is young and fragile. News of his passing could destroy it.
So you know it's a big scene because it's a dream.
Yeah.
Big dream scenes in Babylon 5.
Bittersweet. It was. It really captured a lot of how I think Kosh saw their relationship as well. Kosh definitely likes to see himself as a guiding mentor figure to the younger races. But honestly, as an audience, we all know that's not really who he is.
Yeah. He's a little manipulator.
He wants to see himself in that way. And I think he really does get pissed off when Sheridan says that you're a puppet master because he doesn't want to be that.
They want to be angels.
Yeah. He views himself as something so much kinder and, you know,
and
more
gentler.
Beneficent. Yes, and gentler. So it did mean a lot that was how he chose to portray himself right at the end there for everybody. And
such a good actor to do it too.
It really helped redeem Kosh a lot in the audience's eyes, I think, because, I mean, when I was a kid and we watched it, this was the Kosh we knew as the good Kosh.
Yeah.
And it's still the Kosh who, you know.
It's the better Kosh.
It's certainly
in terms of our morality.
Yeah, it is the nicer Kosh, but still not a nice person, not by any means.
No. And you have this whole sequence is him saying goodbye.
Yeah.
It's him saying not only goodbye, but the thing that no Vorlon will ever admit, which was, I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I got old and stuck in my ways. I believed I was right, but really, you're right. And that's
such a beautiful line that he has when it's just like when you've lived as long as I have, you get used to it. You get used to just being alive. Whereas with humans, mortality is always in the forefront of their minds because we are so aware that our lives are finite and the Vorlons have moved beyond that as a concern. So it really does shake them.
And as people who have consumed fantasy and sci-fi and vampire stuff, that's a staple of you're an immortal being. Those petty human concerns just fade away over time and you get stuck in certain things.
You get stuck in
routines,
you become detached from everything around you, things become a bit of a game, which is very much what Kosh was all about. And then that one brief moment that reconnects him to the rest of the universe in a way that he cares about.
Because he's finite, he's going to go away soon, and so now it's the time to admit, my lord, I was wrong, you were right, this is your time to be, not mine to manipulate and to shove you around the place. And again, great actor to pick. Great acting between these two. The intercutting between that happening and Kosh's death happening at the same time, just to let you know, yes, this is Kosh. And
there's a nice link, which I don't know if I've ever really thought about, but the fact that, like, as a Vorlon, he's gone native in a very similar way that Veer did.
He got influenced by those peaceful people, those people outside of their ways
their
of thinking.
Their values.
And, I mean, Kosh is dead, but not really, kind of. There's a bit of him somewhere. Yep. Who has the bit of him? We'll have that mystery to explore, but it's a very powerful scene. It's a very powerful sequence because this Kosh character has been this mystery guy, and there's all these things that you want characters to say to him, and for him to say stuff. So we get all of that here.
That has meaning up front, not the avalanche's begun. It is too late
for
the
pebbles
to
vote.
Or
you wanted to have
that
a clear
other cryptic bullshit that they spout at every opportunity.
We are thrilled, but also surprised. It's a surprise. And then Kosh is gone and you get the ending beautifully where they sit down, talk about it. Everybody knows, like they all know what's happening. And even the ship knows. And the ship was a part of him.
Oh, the ship. So sad. That was the saddest part.
It's a beautiful ending, though.
Yes.
No, I meant like
it has a final mission.
All these little
flies off into the sun, white angelic light bleeds onto the screen, again, hammering in that feeling like these are angelic beings. Even if Kosh has been shady and the Vorlons will definitely be more shady. It's an end of an era because Kosh was like the good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, he's gone. And you go, oh, I didn't realize
no
he was.
Idea. We have no idea. Like, when you're watching this for the first time, you have no idea what the other Vorlons are going to be like.
Mm. If we are going to get any other Vorlons. Mm. Like, they say they could ship an ambassador out, but things are getting pretty bad. Will they actually get one? Who knows?
Mm. I always thought that it was fairly clear that they were going to try and replace Kosh without anybody noticing because of the way that Delenn explains it.
That is basically the episode. I think it's time to just dive into our actor spotlight section. Talk about an actor or actress that appeared in the episode. Go over their performance, what we thought about it. Any interesting little facts or tidbits that we've learned about them. Rachel, who are we discussing today? Who are we looking at? Who are we diving into? Because there's a few people here. I was looking around going, okay, we've got a lot of guest star characters. We've got Rance Howard himself, father of Ron Howard of the Howard clan.
Mm-hmm.
But
that particular patriarch and that scene is wonderful. But that actor does get to come back.
Yes, yes. Well, one we're talking about today also gets to come back. We're going to talk about the actress who played Dr. Hobbs, and I found out on IMDb that Dr. Hobbs is spelled differently in two episodes with an E-S and just an S. So, which do you prefer?
Just an S.
Just an S?
Played by Jennifer Balgoblin. Balgobin?
Balgobin, yes.
Mm. Maybe. And Dr. Lillian Hobbs.
Yes, Lillian Hobbs. This is her first episode. She just shows up and she's Franklin's rival doctor friend. What did you think about her as a character in that general performance?
I liked her. She came across as somebody who knew what she was on about, but wasn't going to. She was open to discussion, which was important. It wasn't just her way or the highway, but she also wasn't going to back down when she knew she was right. I did like that she wasn't going to just hand over information to Garibaldi as well. That showed a good sense of morals about her. You can see why she works with Dr. Franklin there.
I like that performance a lot because she has to come in and give us a character in a short amount of time. She hasn't been in the episodes before. She has to come in and make us believe that she's a colleague of Franklin's, that he's butts heads with, and that she isn't an antagonist. She's someone also reasonable. And yes, you have that sequence with Garibaldi where they're talking and she understands what Garibaldi wants, but she's just not going to give it to him because, again, she doesn't feel right about that. And she doesn't agree with Franklin often, but she respects him as a person. And I think she does a really great job here. And I'm glad that they do bring her back. She comes back a few times.
She's in Walkabout.
And then she's in, like, the second last episode of the show.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because she takes over Franklin's job. And there's
objects at rest.
There's my criticism. And I don't know what was happening with this actress. But if they just had her once or twice more in season 4 and season 5.
Just it would have been good. More because in the background, even if she didn't have the speaking role.
Because there are many times where Franklin could have somebody to bounce off of, and it could show that Franklin's character, when he does come back as being a doctor, isn't just doing it on his own, which is kind of what does happen anyway, which is, you know, they handle it differently still, but like, if she was there more often, you could buy her being the one that takes over his position, like we did with Talon taking over Jakar's position, because we had Talon several times throughout the series. She's here 3 times. Rachel, thoughts? Dr. Hobbs, she comes in, she has to be no nonsense.
Yeah. She is unflinching. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, yeah, Franklin needs that. But also, like, you're doing your fucking job.
Mm.
And you're just doing your job well.
Mr. Garibaldi, Stephen and I have had our professional disagreements from time to time. But I don't want to see him hurt.
Neither do I.
So I looked up the actress. I was curious of what she's been up to. This is one of her last roles. Then she went on a break for a while, then came back for Repo Chick in 2009.
Where she plays Nevada.
Because she was in Repo Man, the movie. Which that was one of her first roles.
No, it was her first role.
So she
and
went...
she played Debbie in Repo Man and then Nevada in Repo
she
Chick.
She started her career with Repo Man, ended it with Repo Chick.
Book ended.
Lovely. Book ended, but I gave her a look. She's been in a few things, Rachel. You'll go over those, but mm-hmm. I looked her up now. She has social media. She has LinkedIn and stuff, and it seems like she's done a few things. She worked in the field of science for a little while. Ooh. She is a. I think last updated I saw, she was an in-home carer. So she's been doing that stuff. So she may not be active in acting in terms of film and television. She may still be doing it on stage. We've known that many mm-hmm. guest star actors yeah. still do their little bits, but she seems to have at least shifted away from film and TV mm-hmm. for a bit. But yeah. she appeared in a few things yeah. of note.
So she was in Contact, Weird Science, and yes. Cherry 2000.
Weird Science is probably the one that she's most known for. She's one of the gang, and she's opposite the guy from Mad Max 2, the one with the mohawk and the little gay lover in Mad Max 2. So I saw her picture then. I was like, oh, yes, I remember her in Weird Science.
She was in a random episode of ER. Mm-hmm. She was also in an episode of the TV show Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, with Ron Perlman.
Oh, yeah.
And we've had an actor that was in that.
And?
As well, the leads.
Do you want to take the last thing?
She was in an episode of Space Above and Beyond.
For real?
Mm-hmm. So in this part of her career, she was just doing a bunch of little sci-fi fantasy stuff. And then she's like, I'm done. I'll wait for Repo Chick.
Fair.
And again, I think she's very good. I would have liked more of her, if anything. She would have been great as an addition. And I think Babylon 5 just didn't have the ability or wasn't interested in having other Doctor characters be a little bit more regular. Because we had that other Doctor, Dr. Hernandez in Believers. She was a good actress. I liked her. I would have liked to have seen her again. We had Dr. Lazarin as the Markab Doctor. He was just in that one episode. We heard about him. They're not as interested in B5 of having regular doctory characters like they are with security characters or other Earth Force people, which is unfortunate. Like, again, if this reboot ever does happen, that would be something I would like to see.
To be, because I feel like Hernandez and Hobbs feel a very similar.
Yeah.
Like, as a kid, I thought they were the same person.
Yeah. I still occasionally fall into that trap. I have a quote
yes.
from this particular actress. She wrote a book.
Mm. Yes.
Called My Cloak of Colors.
Cool.
And this was like her quote, sort of like a blurb that was on a website that was selling secondhand copies. My heart first led me to acting, then shiatsu massage.
That's right.
And when I fell in love with life, I started writing because I needed to express what I was feeling.
There you are.
Just nice, sweet quote.
Dr. Hobbs. Great job. I want to see more of that character. Very good little little.
And you know what else is great? This episode. I give it a yum yum.
Yum yum.
We have our rating system. Yum being bad. Yum yum being good. No half yums.
No half yums.
We no gradients. It's good or bad. I give this a yum yum.
Yum yum. Oh, this has to be a yum yum.
Yum yum.
Do you feel good saying that?
I don't.
You don't like saying yum yum, do you? Why don't you like saying it?
It just, nope, it feels wrong every time I hear it. I'm like, no, I don't need to hear my younger brother saying that.
Yum, yum.
Nope, feels wrong.
Is it that weird? Yeah, there are some little weird things like that. Like, you know, people don't like the word moist. I think damp's worse, but that's fine. Mm. But yum, yum is the rating we give it.
Yes.
I would love to know, Alana, what we will be talking about next time on Babylon 5. Again, DVD descriptions are being provided. So what are Rachel and I going to be watching and talking about next time?
On the next Babylon 5.
Oh, you lucky people. War Without End, Part 1. Past and present are on a collision course when members of B5 travel through time on a mission to save Babylon 4. An unexpected traveller joins the efforts of Sheridan and crew. Jeffrey Sinclair.
Jeffrey Sinclair!
The original sex man's back, baby!
He was so horny in the pilot movie.
Oh, yeah.
And he's horny in this, too. He's going to travel back in time and populate Minbar with
all
his
skin. Minbar. Yep. Yep. We thought he was gone forever.
Oh, I can't wait. This is going to be for the last two-parter of the series. They only had two-parters.
Mm-hmm.
Official part one, part two. I'm looking forward. I mean, Zathras is back.
Yes.
If only they said not Jeffrey Sinclair, but Zathras. Not to get confused with Zathras.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget, there is a scene with Zathras and Zathras.
Oh, and Zathras. Oh, my Lord. Mm. There's a lot happening.
Maybe I should have changed the description.
No, you have to keep it pure to how JMS wanted it. That is all we've got for you people. It has been a pleasure to have you on, Alana.
Thank you.
You've been watching Babylon 5. We've been lining up with each other in our watches because we are doing it week by week, but you'll do like quick bursts and then like a month off and then quick bursts and then like 2 days off and then another episode. And that's how it's lined up. So it was great to have you on for a banger. It could have been Walkabout.
I know.
I know you're crying. You could have missed on, you could have got Grey 17 is missing.
Oh God. I saw that in the lineup and I was
you could have had Naroon talk, but that is all we've got. Rachel, where can people find us?
They can find us on those various social medias, which are conveniently linked below, and Yum Yum Pod or Yum Yum Podcast. And if you want to shoot us an email, that is yumyumpod@gmail.com.
Yeah.
But if you are like, we like these people talking to each other, we want to hear more of it, you can head over to our Patreon where we do various bonus contact, including...
Contact or content? We
content.
We have watched all of the X-Men movies, Alana.
Oh, God.
Your favorite film, The New Mutants. We watched it. We talked about it.
Oh, my God.
And guess what? Guess what?
Is it fantastic?
It
sucks.
It is.
Is it only yum?
It is. Oh, well, people, come to the Patreon and find out.
No,
there's a lot of opinions.
We can't give that for free on air.
That for free, but we have a lot of stuff. We're going through space above and beyond, which is why we're excited. We're watching that, talking about that. Rachel hasn't seen that.
Haven't seen the episode.
No, she's a late game season entrance, so... Space above and beyond. We're
how much
that?
Of your content will be edited out?
Ah, there you go.
Because it breaches standards like Macbeth.
Oh, yes. There you go. But yes, Patreon, come over to support us. You can be a part of a group Discord where you can ping at Rachel and ask her for food recipes. So
but
that happens.
Just my opinion on food.
Rachel has recipes.
Mm.
But only on the Discord. That you can be a part of when you join the Patreon.
Maybe you can help us figure out what slap it up the middle in a recipe for cookies means.
My grandmother had cookie recipes or recipes for baked goods, and one of the steps was give it a good slap up the middle.
It was part of one of the instructions. It wasn't even the whole thing. It was written out as give it a... And then good was added above.
Oh, that's important.
Like she needed
a good slap up the middle.
She needed to add that.
Give it a slap up the middle.
Didn't work.
So needed to update the recipe to say good slap up the middle.
She was too afraid to write spank. And that was my nan. And that is all we've got. Jakar was not here.
No.
He was too busy.
Was.
He was too busy writing his book.
Yeah.
But he did one time say... Only once.
Only once.
In the pilot movie, as a farewell, he said good eating to you.
So good eating to you, Alana.
Oh, thank you. Good eating to you.
Good eating to you, Rachel.
Good eating to all of you.